Well, there's going to be a meeting of the Joliet Old Timers Baseball Association next month. Are you involved in that by any chance?
No. Okay.
I'm looking forward to becoming involved with that.
No, I played part of one summer up at little town up here north of Elgin. Can't think of it now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying it's a darn old forgetful. Well, I lived up there north of the Elgin ways. I lived up there one time. I was somewhere on the what long in the late 20s sometime.
Well, you're celebrating your 90th birthday next month, isn't that correct?
Right.
Well, congratulations. That's quite an accomplishment.
Yep. I'm very fortunate to have good health. I haven't pampered much either, frankly. But at least that's it.
Well, you were born in this area, in Washburn, is that correct?
Right.
Is that where you got your start as a ball player?
No, I played just a little in high school over at Washburn, and then I went to the University of Illinois.
Oh.
And I played down there for freshman varsity, then 2 years varsity. And then the last year I got kicked out because they caught me playing for money out of the several times. Matter of fact, baseball put me through school.
Uh-huh.
One summer I played up north in South Dakota. Summer of 21. And then they. And before that, I played down at Pekin Fans.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good semi-pro team there. You know, back in those days, some of the larger sized towns around the state had baseball teams. Most of them semi-pro teams. Semi-pro never were in no league or anything, but they were all paid players.
Right.
And pitchers in those days was. Ordinarily, good pitcher, $50 Sunday, something like a little more. So, I made it up the summertime to go to school in the wintertime down at the university.
Right.
Didn't cost so much in those days as it does now. And so it worked out very well. And of course, summer 21, I was up in Dakota, and of course, that's too far away, so I didn't get caught. Then, but the following summer, I played at Mendota all mm-hmm. summer. And,
can you tell me about that North Dakota, South Dakota league? Is that what about a Class C league or?
Well, they run the league. It was mostly semi-pro team.
I see.
They played around there. So I was at Devon Lake, North Dakota, and then of course they start early up there, and the season, their season was over about 1st August,
mm-hmm.
and I had a call from down at Gettysburg, South Dakota. A town about 1,500, which is about 60 miles northeast of Pierre. And people up there were, they had money because wheat had been a good price after World War
mm-hmm.
I, and they're great baseball fans, and they had games. So anyway, I got a call from down there. Says, come on down here. Says, you're about, well, the fellow called me was the varsity catcher at the University of Illinois. And he was managing a team down there to catch it down here in this little town of Gettysburg. So, he says, come on down here, we can use it for another month. And so Labor Day, they all quit journey. So anyway, I went down there, and there was the varsity third baseman, the varsity second baseman, the varsity left fielder, varsity catcher, and I think two other pitchers, all from the university. So, and of course, played there for a month, and then came home, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that was quite a summer. But when they got done, they probably had $800-$900 in the bank, and that was enough to go to school on.
That was a good deal of money back then.
Well.
Yeah.
So then the next year, I made even more than that. But then I got put up. But then when the spring came along, and the old coach, he was an old professional ball player called Carl Lundgren down there, and he never had any ill will because I had stayed in the fold. So I used to go out with them and pitch batting practice to get in shape in the spring. And I started playing then over Pekin on Sunday, along about the 1st of April, middle of April, 1st of May, see. And so, then I graduated in 24, and then that's, I went right from there up to the White Sox.
Did they call you up, or did you go to them for a tryout, or how did that work out?
There was some old professional ball player over there someplace around, was he around Champaign or... Anyhow, he knew him or knew of him, and I don't think he wouldn't play anymore, but he sent my name in, and said they thought they could use me. So, I went up there, and signed the contract, first day I got there, old Harry Grabner, he's a great one to get your name on the line. $358 a month. So, I was on the payroll, worked to the season over at
Was that at the start of the season, in the spring?
That was about the, it was right after graduation, which I'd say now is about, just about the middle of June. And I went in there then. And it's, you can't break into a team, really, in the middle of the season that way, unless you're exceptionally good. And I wasn't that good, by any means. But as old Red Faber told me, he said, well, he said, you've got to come in spring training and they have practice games. And then, of course, they get some idea of working that way. And he said, you go on the road, he said, we lose four or five games, and then the attendance drops off. That's what they try to keep you away from. So you can't bring it. I was there about 2 months, and then they sent me up for the Michigan Ontario League to Waukegan, or Muskegon, on the east side of the lake. That was their, one of their little farm clubs. And so I went up there for a month then, the tail end of the season. And, well, I could get along in that league all right. and enjoyed it more because, I could have a regular routine and I could go according to you. The trouble with being down in the big leagues, of course, and if you were in the regular routine, of course, ordinarily you'd pitch today and tomorrow you'd rest, and then maybe the next day you'd throw a little, that'll work out a little bit, and then another rest, and then pitch about the fourth day again, after the usual. And of course, fellows like me, I'd be a throwing, and if they have the left hander against us that day, I pretty always pitch for batting practice. I've left handed, see, and so I did that. That was just a matter of course. If the other team was using the left-hander, I was a bad practice pitcher.
Yes.
And then down in the bullpen, and you'd be getting up and warming up. And, well, of course, I was large enough and strong enough to stand all that work, because it came when I got in there. Even then, my arm was about half dead. I didn't have any, or a little fastball I had, I didn't have it like it should have been. But that, of course, is the way they work, and so that was it. So it was quite an experience, and very enjoyable, and with many memories about it, and so that you enjoy, and I don't regret it, not for a minute. So then I came out, and that following winter, I came here. I've been here ever since.
So you finished the minor league season in Muskegon, and that was the end of your professional career?
Yeah. Outside of the, of course, that's the first time I played semi-pro ball after that then. When I came here for to start practicing law, of course, I played down at Pekin for, three or four years down there. We had a good, class B team. In fact, we used to play Peoria 3i. They were the 3i. We used to play them for always a game either in the spring or in the fall. And we got along with them all right to get to hold our own with them. But
any coaching or managing around here after that? Any involvement with youths or anything like that?
No, I never did any of that. I oftentimes thought maybe I should have devoted a little time to the local high school team, but I never seemed to get around to it.
Well, you've had a busy law practice, I suspect.
You get into law business, that takes your time pretty well. That's right.
Were you pitching in the summers through working on your law degree, or was that after the... after your career?
No, I pitched. I pitched the summer See, that was, I went there at the university. There was just 5 years I was down there.
I see.
And in other words, I went right on to law school right there. So it all... so
it all tied together.
It all tied together, that's right.
I see.
But...
what was it like playing in the Michigan Ontario League? Was it did you have trains, or how did you get from one city to the other? And what were the conditions
trains.
Like?
Trains, yeah, we traveled with train entirely,
mm-hmm.
And that was about sort of. And it was pleasant, and that were it was the same class league as the Peoria 3i,
mm-hmm.
And well, there was Hamilton and. Another town over there in Ontario that was that league. There were two Canadian clubs, and then there was Flint and Muskegon and Grand Rapids. That's all I think of right now.
I see. Do you recall any of the players who were with you in that league?
No, I can't. I can't. Give a one. We had, and I can't tell his name, but there's a fellow that went to law school down at the University of Alabama that was at Muskegon, an outfielder. And I don't remember now what his name was, but we used to kind of pal around together because he was, of course, he'd gone to law school down there, and I'd been down here. And
he had several similar interests,
yeah,
obviously.
Right. But I just can't, I don't know, just got away from him because I've never very close to any of them.
Mm-hmm.
And
that was a short period.
That's right.
You were a pitcher the whole time, is that correct? You said that you spoke modestly about your fastball. What was your best pitch?
I had good curveball. They have the fellows at the big leagues, the boys there, they recognized a good curveball. I had good curveball. Reasonably good control all the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they like for bat practice.
Sure.
Bat practice only wants something through there about waist high, about half speed, or
uh-huh.
better. But curveball was my mainstay when I got in trouble. I had to fall back on it. But you know, in the big leagues, you got to have a little fastball. It don't have to be a real good one, but you got to have a pretty fair one you can blow in there once in a while. And then you see you build on that. You get your change up and your slow curve and your fast and your other stuff too. And so it works in better that way. But it's kind of a foundation for it.
Can you describe how you threw your curveball?
Hmm?
Can you describe how you threw that curveball?
No, of course that. Mine really went off this finger.
The middle finger.
Middle finger is the longest, and I had this lying right along a seam, so that when it went off there, the seam was here, so it give it all the spin you could get.
Uh-huh.
And I generally, of course, hit the wrist a little, but I don't wonder they had this. It was more like that. So, and I used to use that for a changeup too.
Mm-hmm.
Try to right-hand hitters for a changeup over the kind of get over the outside corner if you could.
Was it an over-the-top motion or three-quarters?
Three-quarters about. About what it is. And it broke down and into a right-hander, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was, the old days, you know, there were a few spitballers left, which I never believed at all. But those fellows that were when they changed the law and outlawed the spitball, of course, all the old-timers could still use it.
Well, there was one on the team with you, certainly,
yeah.
Red Faber. Did he ever discuss the spitball with you and how it was thrown?
No, I knew how it worked, but I didn't. They bit it on, you know, and the ball left their thumb last, you know, on the spitball. It was slick up here under their fingers,
mm-hmm.
so forth. It left their thumb last.
I see.
That gave it a pretty good downspin, you know. It was a sharp breaking card down, and they threw it so it probably broke out over the outside corner alone. And
Faber was approaching the end of his career, but there was somebody who broke in, I think, the same year you did. It was just starting, Ted Lyons.
Yeah, I roomed with him when I was there, when we were at home Chicago. Yeah, he had joined the club the fall before, and of course, really well established, had a good pitcher. Turned out, eventually, was an exceptionally good pitcher.
Right, Hall of Fame material.
That's right. He was a good pitcher, and but he was getting pretty well started at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And nice fellow. Yeah, there was Lyons, of course. Buck Crouse was doing most of the catching, but mm-hmm. he was. Ray Schalk was still there, but he was catching now and then. Ray was an excellent catcher, Ray Schalk.
Mm-hmm.
But of course, you never got any chance. They couldn't. The hitters that were against you, you couldn't. You didn't know just what the best way was to pitch to them. And Krause, I never thought was any great shake at a figured that out. Schalk, of course, was a different story. He was. Eddie Collins was playing second base, and he was, to my mind, was the smartest ball player I ever saw.
Well, he's still probably the greatest second baseman ever.
Yeah, he was an excellent one, and a very nice fellow.
Well, it amazed me that he led the league in steals that year, and he was 37 years old.
Hmm.
Eddie Collins was 37 years old that year, and he still led the league in steals.
In 24?
Yes.
I didn't know just how old he was. I know he was long, but... Yeah, he was, because he had been with Philadelphia originally. You know?
Right.
And then he came to the Sox sometime along there before the World Series of 17.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, with the Sox and time with that, then he got into that damned Black Sox mess.
Right.
And, of course, he had been involved in that at all. Nobody that was smart enough that was involved in it. But,
did any of the Black Sox players, the 1919 team, ever come around to the ballpark five years later?
No. Well, I was playing semi-pro ball before I went up there, the Sox. I pitched a game up at Kankakee, where I was pitching in for what they call the American Legion team out of mm-hmm. Champaign. The fellow that ran the paper down there, the sports page, he was the kind of sponsoring. And we played against a team up there, and Buck Weaver was playing, I think, third base or shortstop.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd been on this Black Sox team.
Right. Right. He was the one who kept protesting his innocence, I believe. He was the one who kept saying that he was innocent.
Yeah, I don't think he was involved as much as some of the others.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Shula Joe Jackson, from all I've ever been able to know or learn about it Jackson got a bad deal. He should never have been expelled. Mm-hmm. All he did was he just didn't tell on him. He knew about him. Mm-hmm. He didn't tell on him. That was about as far as I ever been concerned.
With your law background, that's very interesting to hear.
Mm-hmm.
With your law background, it's very interesting to hear that opinion.
And of course, I didn't know otherwise. You didn't. They never heard him talk about that much.
Uh-huh.
I heard Collins talking one time, and this is interesting. He said that he thought that Jackson, Shooter Joe Jackson, they called him, was the best natural hitter he ever saw. He said it didn't matter who was pitching, or whether they were throwing curves or fastballs or anything else. But he always hit the ball hard someplace. Hit the ball hard, he said. And I had a lot of respect for his opinion, because he said he's the best natural hitter he ever saw.
I think Babe Ruth said he patterned his swing after Jackson's swing.
Well, it could have been, although Babe had what we would call a golf swing. Believe it or not, he had kind of he'd come around and he'd swinging up, like from here up by,
mm-hmm.
and
he's trying to elevate the ball, right?
Yeah, I guess apparently it looked like it. He was you never pitched him low inside. He'd lose that for you, easy.
Did you observe Ruth only, or did you pitch against Ruth?
Well, I pitched against him a couple of times, two or three times. He grounded, he hit a ground ball right up to the shortstop, I recall that particularly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he bunted once and did that there, just, you know, the Yankees were the king of the walk at that time, 24.
Yeah,
And they were going to, I never got in the game unless they had a big lead, unless the game was lost before we got in there.
Mm-hmm.
And then they try to make, they love to make you look bad, see. But all I pitched was curveballs, low outside.
That's what McGraw said to do.
Huh?
John McGraw said that's the way you should pitch him, and
yeah. It
had some success, I guess it was the season before.
I had pretty good control of the curve, and I could just try to play it with an outside corner. Huh. And I remember the first one, strike, and the second one, just outside about 6 inches. They never batted an eye. He never. And then back, get over the corner again, that's when he was swinging and hitting. But he was a good hitter, no question about that. You know.
Oh, right. I understand he's a very aggressive base runner, too.
Yeah. All very interesting. And I was around the circuit around the rhythm. Right.
You know, most of those ballparks don't even exist anymore. Did you have a favorite ballpark, one that you thought was particularly beautiful, or one that would be particularly good to play in?
I don't know. I don't think so. Particularly, I was up in Detroit, Philadelphia, New York. Of course, the Yankee Stadium was I think, almost new.
Right. I think it opened in 23.
23. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was. And we were there the next summer. It was a reasonably good park. It was the White Sox had the best playing field in the league. I mean, it was uniform, and mm-hmm. the foul lines were about the same distance, you know, and about the same amount around. The Yankees had their left foul line had an offset that come in like that, and then out on for the years. And down to St. Louis, that's the hottest place in the country. Always had the reputation of being the hottest place.
That's what everybody has said.
But I was in Washington, but I didn't see the Washington Park, because but I got my papers there, they sent me a notice, and then they would come in back and report to go to Muskegon, and we were in Washington at the time. And I hadn't gone to the game the day before, and we weren't playing the day before, we were getting there ahead of time, and they were playing somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And I didn't go out to watch it. I'd never been back east before. I wanted to do a little sightseeing.
Sure.
Then the next day, I got noticed to go back to Chicago to go to Muskegon. But it's in Boston. Boston had a very unusual park. They had that big high. They still got it. That big high and a great big long left or right field. Jesus, I don't know how it looked like. Looked like it ran over the next county. I remember. When we were up there, Collins, believe it or not, who was not a particularly long ball hitter, hit one into that right field stands. He said the only time he ever had the whole time he'd been in the league.
Well, he did a lot of things, but he wasn't exactly a power hitter. So
no,
that would have been a little unusual. He did just about everything else superbly.
Mm-hmm. He was a little like Luke Appling. Of course, he wasn't there. He came later, but... Luke and Stansbury don't foul off those pitches. Mm-hmm. They got what they liked. Collins would do the same thing. Foul the ball. He batted left-handed, and he'd foul the ball over behind third base, foul it off. You know. And I remember he had a bat that was not very big around. He had a small of it, and they had him all rubbed down all the time. But he was a good hitter and a smart hitter. There's an old fellow named old Harry Hooper, an old outfielder.
Right, from the Red Sox originally,
Yeah, he was playing right field. They were batting, I think, in the lineup about second and third or something like that. After the first inning, and I could hear them getting together, and they said, well, see, first he threw me a curveball, and then I got one outside, and then he threw another one, and that's the one I should have hit, maybe. Mm-hmm. But they were always comparing, they're both batted left-handed. They were comparing notes about how this fellow pitched to whoever's pitching.
Who had the best arm that you saw? The best like outfield or infield arm? Hooper was supposed to have had a particularly good arm.
He had a good arm. Yeah, I saw him one time in particular. There was a man on third, which is important to the game. And two out in the fly, no, less than two out, one out. Fly ball hit the right field, not too deep. And you can see Hooper squared away to throw.
Positioning himself so that,
he hit already, see? And when he caught that ball, they wheeled her in there, and fell out the plate by about 10 feet, see? But it didn't happen very often. But I think he had his most accurate. I know they, Felch was there. He was a young fellow that's from South Alabama or someplace.
Felch?
Yeah, Ray Felch. Was it Ray Felch? Or,
it was a Happy Felch.
Happy Felch. I don't. Anyhow, he's playing. Hmm. He's playing left field. And he hits Butler, I think, as a pitcher part of it, but he was playing the outfield, and they and.
You mean Bib Falk?
Huh?
Bib Falk. F-A-L-K?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That one. Oh, okay. Yeah. Now I'm with you. Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, Cam was on third.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess a marvelous fielding player.
He was. Very good. And a fellow named Barrett was trying to play short. He didn't do a very good job.
Hmm. There was another good outfielder that I wanted to ask you about, Johnny Mostel. Is that the right pronunciation? Mostel?
Mostel, yeah. M-O-S-T-I-L.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Johnny Mostel played center field. He and Archdeacon were alternating to get right and left-handed pitchers. Archdeacon was very fast. He could lay a bunt down and be at first base before you could pick it up. And Mostel batted right-handed. And if there was any left-handers pitching, well, Mostel was always in center field. And generally with right-handers, Archdeacon played a good deal anyway. Yeah, Mostel was a little bit weak on curveballs, as right-hander curveballs, and of course he hit Ryan, kept breaking into him. But I used to in batting practice, I put her always. Oh, I'd throw a fellow two or three fast ones, then I'd throw him maybe curve. I'd just go like this at him. See, they knew it was coming. He would always so they could see a curve down in. But Johnny Mostel was And each Archdeacon, they played center field.
You know, Mostel attempted suicide just a couple of years after that.
Yeah, I guess that's right.
I was wondering if you'd heard anything about that or any observed anything. Unusual, obviously, but, you know, a first-rate player.
Yeah, that's right.
What about Earl Shealy, the first baseman?
Oh, a big guy, Whitey Shealy. He was a big fellow, a good hitter, a little slow. He wasn't very fast, and even he was that good a hitter until one year he kind of led the league in doubles, I think, or almost.
Wow.
And he had to do it by getting hits that probably would have been triples for anybody else. but he got doubles. Yeah, Whitey Shealy, big strong fella. And any argument started by he got right behind him.
but he'd be pretty safe there.
Yeah, he was. Whitey Shealy. I think he was kind of light complexion. And, nice. They were all nice fellows. They had Ollie Thurston. Thurston was pitching.
How did he get that nickname, Sloppy Thurston?
Ollie.
Hollis Thurston, but I've seen a nickname for him as Sloppy.
I didn't.
Yeah, okay.
I wasn't familiar with that.
All right.
He was a junk ball pitcher. Threw a lot of slow stuff.
Maybe that's where the nickname came from.
Yeah, that might have been.
Yeah.
But
he was a 20-game winner that year.
That's right. He was, and I remember just as well. We were walking around. We were talking about pitching and about what to do and about where to throw him. I was trying to pump him all I could. But we were in Boston, and we hadn't played that day, I don't think. We played, but this was the evening, or about the evening. There's a game going on at the Commons there, see, and so we stopped and watched a little bit. Of course, kids were playing, just like the kid would be. He says, well, you can see now why they pay us a little more to play when you see somebody else trying. So I was in Boston. Of course, they had the blue sky the blue sky, where they not the blue, well, they call it the blue law.
In blue laws, uh-huh. No Sunday ball.
No Sunday ball. Mm-hmm. And so I used that for a sightseeing trip over to the wharf where the battle was.
Lexington and Concord and
And over there to cross there to the where they would come up the hill at Fort there and there.
I can't think of it, but I know what you mean. I can't come up with the name either.
They come up, you know, charged up there, and finally they ran out of ammunition.
Bunker Hill. Yeah, there we are.
Sure. Bunker Hill. So I saw that. I walked around most time, you know, of course, in Boston, the distances aren't very great,
right.
Really.
Uh-huh.
But they got lost. Walked around in a big circle and finally found out where I was. I had one of these maps from the bus company that had tours, you know, mm-hmm. and I was following that. But I was over there to Bunker Hill and signed the book. Mm-hmm. I was back there again in 34, not baseball, I guess. Mm-hmm. I was there on another trip. So I was over there again, and I just got the book out and looked back. There it was. Still, they had the same registration there. Very interesting. Good, I think probably, we stayed at an old hotel, but wonderful food there. Wonderful food. Probably the best on the circuit.
Major league life was pretty good, I suspect.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Me at that age, I could eat most anything.
How did you get from the hotel to the ballpark? Was it buses or?
Well, buses. It was very far. It was far enough. Of course, generally we were far enough away. In New York, we went by the trolley.
So there wasn't a chartered bus or anything like that. You're sort of on your own.
That's right. Remember, of course, I just went along. I trailed right along with some of the older drivers that had been around because I didn't know it. And I remember coming back from there one evening, and somehow we got by or didn't stop at our station, and we went clear down to 42nd Street, or whatever it was, and we got off there and got on another one, rode around about a block or two, and got off it, then jumped on another one, went back up the street. We were staying at the new something hotel, about 72nd or 2nd, 73rd Street. And but we went out on the trolley, I remember particularly. Detroit, I don't recall how we went down, or St. Louis. Never walked those unless it was over a couple blocks.
Well, those would have been all afternoon games at that time, obviously. How did you spend the evenings?
I don't know. Sometimes we went to show. I didn't do much of anything. Mm-hmm. Some of the fellows run around, of course. Some of the boys had girlfriends around different places.
Some things never change.
Yeah, there was one fellow named, Mac, I can't think of his name now, Rubber Iron, they call him Rubber Iron Conley, I think it was.
Oh, Sarge Conley?
Sarge Conley.
Yeah.
And Rubber Iron Conley, and he was a relief pitcher, and he had a little black book with him. He had the names and addresses, and he said, well, I got 108 girls in there, he said. I've got two or three of the last trip I hadn't got down yet, he said. he was a caution. I remember I was rooming with him one time at one place. We were roomed together, and they always had pitcher and catcher meetings in the morning when you're on the road, journeying the hotel, that was, of course. And old Tom Neely was a coach there at that time, and he called up and he said, Sarge there? And I said, no. And he said, have you know where he is? I said, no, by God, I don't. He hadn't showed up out all night. See. And I was afraid he was going to ask me if he was in, but I think old Tom suspected he didn't want to make me put me on the spot. And I said, no. And he said, well, you seem to be looking for it. But I said, okay, I'll be glad to. And that's all he said, see. And he never showed up, like, anything until everybody's out at the ballpark and was suited up and out to the bench, see. And pretty soon, here comes Sarge. Bat practice was over, I think. He comes Sarge. And he said, well, he says, all ready to go, he said. I don't know, they never did about it. Father told me. Oh, he was a character.
You mentioned the coach, Tom Neely. Who were some of the other coaches?
He's the only one I remember. Coaches, they didn't have many coaches in those days.
How helpful were the coaches?
Huh?
How helpful were the coaches?
Oh, they weren't any good to you. Oh, I'll tell you, we had an old pitcher there, the coach, that helped to us. He was an old, good one, was old Ed Walsh.
Oh, you say he was or wasn't any help?
He wasn't any help.
He wasn't?
No. Mm-hmm. But old Ed Walsh, he had a pretty good, he'd been pitched on back in 10, 12, long there is what he was.
Yeah,
best.
Yeah.
Hell, he probably had pretty good, he had a good fastball then as I did. 24. But Ed Walsh was there, and he was, old Tom Neely, he was, that's all I can remember now. Walsh did go along on the trips. But Dealey was along, and they had a traveling secretary too. I can't remember what his name was, but they made all the arrangements, all that. And I remember the first one we started out of that trip. We caught the New York Centrals out on the south side in Chicago at about 6:30, and we pulled into New York along about 5 o'clock the next day.
So,
yeah, it was a good accommodation. So, Pullman, he ate a diner and so forth. Of course, I'd been around then. The University of Illinois, we traveled, of course. We'd been down south for spring training a couple of years, and up in North Dakota.
You were used to train travel, certainly.
Oh, yeah. Sure. I'll tell you, this isn't a baseball story, and I didn't want to take
it. Oh, go right ahead.
But I was in Devil's Lake, North Dakota, and this call came from Gettysburg, South Dakota. And I looked at the map, and then looked up the train schedule, and there was train service into Gettysburg on weekdays. But the Northwestern ran, the main lines in those days ran east and west across the country, and when you started traveling north and south, you had trouble. Well, they told me I could get out of there Friday morning, and they wanted me to get down there for Sunday morning to pitch. For Sunday to pitch, not morning. And so I get 5 o'clock in the morning there at Devil's Lake and walk down through the railroad yards out there and to catch freight train out of there about 6 o'clock in the morning. And I was on that down to get out as far as Bismarck by evening. Got out and stayed all night. And I'd figured out if I could go out of Bismarck the next morning, get on down to the main line, the Northwestern, and then they could get west to some little station which was about 30 miles south of Gettysburg. That I could get in there and about 2 o'clock in the morning, and I'd just lay around someplace to sleep no rooms or anything, just someplace to camp out until morning, and then I'd call up there and somebody'd come down and get me. Well, I had that fear that the nearest I could get to it as quick as I could, see. I'd figured out from the railroads. So I did that, got over down to Western, got on this train here and went west. Pulled into this little station, just a light or two, you couldn't see as dark. And pulled in there at 2 o'clock in the morning, and I got off the train, and a couple of fellas stepped up and said, "Your name Barnes?" And I said, "Yes." He said, "Oh, we're glad to see you." He said, "We get you." I said, "Don't think I'm not glad to see you." They figured out the same damn thing. And I had driven the old Model T down there 30 miles to just on a chance that I'd be on that train. Like that, if you can test, that's just as true as it is. So help me if you can tie that. But I got
smart ball players. Well, smart ball players. They knew how to get around.
They weren't even ball players. These fellows came down to get me. They were just fellows that lived there at the Gettysburg. They were ball fans. But
they did want you to pitch that next day, sure then, didn't they?
That's right. And so, but that was interesting. They Great time.
According to the records I've got, the White Sox had two or three managers in 1924. I guess Eddie Collins managed them some.
And you can see Evers was supposed to be the manager, director manager. And as I got the story, he was in the hospital or operation on or something or other. Something happened. He was out for a while. And when I joined up there, Collins was managing. And the team was going pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But when Evers got a little better and he came back, so he took over as manager, see. Well,
okay.
Well, I don't know. I don't like to run anybody down, but I don't think he wasn't a good manager. Didn't know anything about pitchers at all, about them.
Now, what do you mean when he didn't know anything about pitchers? Do you mean he didn't know how to use them, or he gave them bad advice? Did he call the pitches that you were supposed to?
Mm-hmm.
Did he call the pitches from the bench?
No. Okay. Never did. The catcher did that. He didn't know anything about using these pitchers. I mean, so they had the rest and the rotation and all that. They could do it. But
was it the old story that he was an infielder and he played every day, and so he figured a pitcher probably could also if they just get off their duffs.
He was a good ball player and a good infielder, a good second baseman. He played second base for the Cubs, you know.
Right.
But he was that was all I could say about him. But then he was the only one that I had around about. There was just those two. Collins, I said, was a nice fellow. I traveled on that trip east, and his wife went along.
That was unusual, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. And she went along. I think they'd come from the east away. She was going back to visit. And I remember we played a little bridge along on the road. So you'd, but nice folks.
But you mentioned the trip to Washington, and that reminds me that Washington won the championship that year.
Mm-hmm.
You said you saw Washington play. Do you remember anything about that particular game?
Oh, no, I don't. I saw the, what's his name, pitched.
Johnson?
Yeah, I saw him pitch. I think that was in Chicago. But I saw him pitch, and he could blow through there.
Yeah, he'd been up for, what, about 15 years by that time, I guess, and approaching the end.
He was known as a fastball pitcher, really, you know.
Who was the best pitcher you saw in 24?
Oh, I don't know. That'd be hard to say, to be honest about it.
Was anybody throwing with a better fastball than Johnson in 24? Did he still have the best fastball?
I think that I ever saw.
Uh-huh.
Of course. But, of course, I wasn't batting against all of anybody else. So maybe I'm a poor judge, but I don't think he was. I think, of course, at that time he was on his way down.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt about that. But I don't remember the. I didn't see any of the left-handers back in New York.
Mm-hmm.
There was some fellow pitched there that day that I remember one day there was pitching there that.
Herb Pennock? Pennock?
No, he never pitched there. Pennock was a darn good pitcher, good left-hander. He was a good shooter. He had good control, and he had a good curveball and a good change of pace. And he could. And besides that, he was smart too. He knew what he was doing out there. That, of course, was very important. But that was. I can't think of this fellow that was pitched against us that day. Was Shockey, was it?
Bob Shockey?
Shockey, I believe. You like me, that kind of sticks in my mind. He had he was pretty rough. He had 8 or 9 strikeouts that day.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember I was up there batting, and he threw a couple by there, and I made him begin to. I choked up on the bat because he was getting it by me. I finally hit a little fly ball out toward outfield at the mound, I think.
How much success did you have as a hitter? Were you a good hitter, a good fielder?
No, I did play I used to play center field up in Mr. Ontario League right the last couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So when I wasn't pitching, they wanted some extra center fielder. I filled in the center field for maybe two or three games, three or four games. I always kind of liked to play the outfield. When you with the Sox in batting practice, if you weren't pitching batting practice, you're probably out in the outfield shagging the fly ball and getting the ball back in. See? I don't know much of anything else.
Well, let me ask just a couple of other questions. And you mentioned Ruth, certainly, but there were a lot of other wonderful hitters around at that time. Any that you'd care to mention?
Well, of course, the Musils were there in Chicago. They were right-hand hitters, which made it a little rough for me. And
Well, Cobb was still around, obviously,
that's right. I never pitched against him. He was he was a good hitter and he was a competitor, you know, like Cobb. They were competitor. They were in the ball game all the time. Cobb had as usual, which everybody knew about, he held the bat with his hands about 3 or 4 inches apart. And that was something a little unusual. You didn't see him. I don't think anybody else did.
Did you pitch against him?
No, I didn't. No, I never pitched against him.